This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, a full-service marketing and commerce platform that helps restaurants get discovered, make more money, and engage their diners. Join over 8,000 restaurants already using Bento Box today to deliver better hospitality. Visit getbento.com/HRN today to get your first month free. That's getbento.com/HRN.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It is Monday, April 4th, 2022. This is our 321st episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding chef, and I'm currently on location at her beautiful restaurant in New York City, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we'll have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to celebrate the power of simplicity. Now, this is something I know my guest today truly understands and practices, knowing that it's best to keep it simple. Let's avoid complicating things and instead let's let products and ingredients speak for themselves. The key is starting with quality goods and then allowing them to shine. So let's remember not to overdo, overthink, or overwork any situation, as simplicity wins. That's my tip today. Okay, I'm so excited to be on location. I'm here with Hillary Sterling. She's the executive chef at Chisiamo, which is part of Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group. And the location is in Manhattan West, New York City. And Hillary was born and raised in Brooklyn. She felt the pull of the industry as a teenager, bussing tables during the summers in Montauk, New York. Her career has since led her through New York City kitchens, including Bobby Flay's Mesa Grill, as well as Bolo, plus Lupa Osteria Romana, and as chef de cuisine at Michelin-starred Avoce, working under Chef Missy Robbins. Most recently, Hillary returned to her domestic roots as the executive chef and partner at Vix, and at Chisiamo, Hillary has created an ambitious restaurant centered around live fire cooking and the understated excellence of seasonal ingredients. Hi, Hillary.
How are you?
I'm good.
That was quite the intro.
was it good?
It was great. I was like, wow, I can't wait to meet that person.
Well, yeah, she's fabulous. I've met her.
No, so, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, you know, I cut it down, but I tried to hit on highlights, at least of kitchens you've worked in, which is an impressive roster. So, I'm thrilled to be here. I love restaurants, and there's something even just about being here before service, like, that's so special.
The calm before the storm, the peace, the quiet, it's some of my favorite moments in a restaurant, is when no one else is here. I was here really early this morning, and, you know, kind of just walking around, checking everything, and it's just like there's something about being alone here and being one with the space. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love it. So I always start out with my guests about, get into their background a little more. So why don't you take us back a bit into what we mentioned Montauk, but really truly got you to cooking and wanting to do that as a career?
You know, I worked in Montauk for years because I could walk. When I was 14, the closest place to work was a restaurant. So I started working in restaurants and in the front of the house, and I felt that magic, that energy, that excitement. Just understanding the hospitality of, like, someone needs something, your job is to make sure they have it without ever them knowing that you worked really hard to get there. And I kind of worked in a numerous restaurants as in front of the house. I worked in a couple other places. I worked at a bar across from Wrigley Field after college.
Wait, what years was that? Because I worked at a bar across from Wrigley Field.
I worked at the Cubby Bear in 2000.
I was on the other corner at Sports Corner.
No way.
I was a cocktail waitress, or I guess more a beer. Yeah. A beer waitress. So funny.
Oh my God, old styles galore.
Yeah, it was like 90. I was there in like 96 or something.
What
like
a fun summer. It was the most like fun I've had. Like, I mean, we served burgers and I worked the beer tubs in the middle of the dance floor. And, you know, I saw what it took to run an enormous operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it always stuck with me. I mean, but it was like a machine. And, you know, we would do thousands of people, you know, because, and then 10 people if there wasn't a game. And the Cubs were terrible back then, too.
I was about to say that. They were terrible, but didn't matter.
Everyone
still went to the games. And that's still, Wrigley is still my favorite stadium.
I lived a couple blocks away with some of my college roommates, and it was really...
I did, too.
It was such a great fun.
Oh, my God,
fun.
After the show, we got to reminisce.
So I was working at this bar in Wrigley, and then during the day, I worked at a company called C.H. Robinson, where we moved things from point A to point B, and realizing that if I had a dream of, like, you know, maybe I should actually own a restaurant one day. I should know how to cook professionally. Because I'd always loved cooking growing up. And in college, we would cook all the time. And I always kind of was drawn to the kitchens and cooking for my friends. And so I was like, there was the Cordon Bleu was on the other side of where my office was that I was working at the time. So at night, I would go to the Cordon Bleu, and I spent a year. I got my culinary degree there. And I decided that at that time, restaurants in Chicago were like Trotters, True, and like just Blackbird, you know, where to, in Spiaggia, I guess,
yeah.
At the time.
Well, I am on the opposite end of my waiting tables type career. I was a server at Charlie Trotter. So I've been both ends. But so, you're right. Back then, there were few options.
And so I decided to come back. It was right before the summer. So I actually came back to Montauk for the summer.
Nice.
And worked in a bunch of just restaurants, cooking and bartending and you name it. I did it that summer because then I spent 6 months in Europe after that, which most of the time was in Italy, actually. I just kept finding myself in Italy. But fast forward, I came back to New York City after all my travels, and I got a job at Mesa Grill.
What was that like?
It was the most eye-opening experience. I'd never worked in a proper, like, New York City kitchen. It was my first, like, real job that we did that many covers. Besides one of the sous chefs, I was the only woman in that kitchen, and the pastry chef. And I learned really fast. It wasn't an option. Now we give a lot of people a lot of time training. There it was kind of like, here you go, let's work this. And I knew nothing about Southwestern and Mexican food at the time. So for me, it was this crash course of intensity and really understanding of what it took to be a cook in New York City. And I loved it. I worked there for years.
And then you continued on working with Bobby.
I went over to Bolo. I loved Spanish food and I loved the opportunity. The tapas and the style was just really, it was really amazing. Beginning my appreciation of simplicity to the max right there. I stayed with him at Bolo. And then I, on my days off, as any cook would do, you go out to eat. And I found myself sitting at the bar at Lupa, eating a bowl of beets with pistachio butter. And having a spritz, and this is like in 2006. So a spritz back then was definitely something very different. It was an excitement. It was a flavor that you are not familiar with. And then a couple weeks later, there was a Craigslist ad for a sous chef at Lupa. And that became my catalyst to my Italian cooking career, essentially. That kind of pushed me through. I spent 3 years at Lupa. Then we opened a place called Bar Milano. I don't know if anyone remembers this. It was in like 2008, 2009.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It was an unfortunate timing restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was only focused on Northern Italian food. It was amazing. It was like marble walls and only a Northern Italian wine list. And for 2008, 2009, this was a very progressive restaurant.
Bring it back.
I think about it frequently. It's, you know, bringing that Negroni to the forefront and, you know, and really understanding what Northern Italian cooking versus Southern Italian cooking is and the differences. And then after that, I found myself as the chef de cuisine at Avoce, which I spent 4 years there. And then,
which location were you at?
Madison. Okay. I was downtown. This is, you're sitting in the farthest north I've ever worked in my 20 plus year career in Manhattan.
Yeah, but you probably came up and visited maybe.
Maybe.
Well, maybe once.
Maybe once or twice. During the hurricane, I worked up there. That was about
it. All right. So you've made it to what, 33rd Street-ish? Okay.
That's as far as I've gotten.
I live uptown, or I live by Columbus Circle, so I welcome you.
Thank you so much. And I, you know, after Avoce, I did some more travel again, and found myself at VIX.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you were at VIX for
6.5 years, almost.
Quite a bit, and I think that's when I got to know you most or better. I think maybe we met when you were along this path.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, with Avoce. But so what is it about Italian food that's really gotten your heart, or really that you've decided to stick with that?
I mean, it's in my heart. This isn't like a choice. I was born to cook Italian food. I love it. I know I come from a Eastern European Russian family, but for me, you know, I think that the love of the history, the food, the cuisine, like just the way you can travel throughout the regions and it changes so dramatically, and we get to really taste those flavors. And I found myself in Italy many a times, and I'm just drawn to that finding that next flavor, that next step, the next story to be able to recreate.
It's in your heart, and obviously I can tell from your cooking, having had it multiple times, being here at Ci Siamo. I've now dined twice, once solo, which actually I noted I talked about my solo experience on my episode 305, if anyone wants to go back and listen to that. But I've loved it, and I came in last week for lunch. So talk for people who haven't been here before a bit about what you're doing and how you got connected with Danny, or Danny brought you in.
It's a connection. Yeah. I met Danny years ago at a No Kid Hungry event. I was introduced via a mutual friend, and we stayed in contact over the years. And then something about fire and pasta came together, and here I am.
Say those two words, fire, pasta. Sounds fun.
So here at Ci Siamo, we focus obviously on live fire cooking, but also with the accompaniment of pasta and vegetables, two things that I'm super passionate about. We have created a menu based on a lot of my travels over the years, especially coming back after the pandemic. You know, I know we're still somewhat in it, right? But, you know, we wanted this opening to welcoming all back into going out in New York City again, to dining out, to being comfortable to dine out, and kind of reminiscing about all of our travels and the things that we dream to go to or have never been to, kind of taking you on a journey here. So obviously we focus on simplicity to the max, but a lot of the food that was inspired for this opening menu was probably my last couple trips to Italy. These trattorias that, you know how to take a piece of bread and put anchovies on it and just make it the best piece of bread and anchovies that you can have. Our pasta with rabbit was based off of something in a trattoria I ate in Piemonte. Just kind of drawing all these wonderful moments and kind of taking me back to those places, and then you're on a journey with me on where I've been.
Yeah, well, side note, I did a semester in Florence in college, and so I have a little love for Italy, too.
It's so amazing. I mean, I haven't been to Florence in actually 20 years, but I always find myself back to Rome as a home base. That was definitely a home base of mine when I traveled, and I still really, truly appreciate a cacio e pepe or an amatriciana or any of those really regional specific from Rome.
I don't know. I've been to Italy several times, but I always feel, I'm due to go back for sure.
It's always just the noise. It's the noise that draws you in. You can't hear that noise here. The pigeons, the noise of the people.
The motociclette.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially like if you're in Naples, my God. You know, the bikes going past you in the markets, and the chatter and the coffee and the smells. Those are all really amazing things. That you can find in other countries, but there's something about it in Italy that really just holds you dear.
Yeah, this is a special, special place. So let me ask you my question for my last guest. On episode 3:20, I had on Alan Salkin. He's a world-renowned writer on politics, culture, and trends. And he recently covered and is featured in the Netflix four-part documentary, Bad Vegan, Fame, Fraud, Fugitives, about the bizarre story of Sarma Mengelis. We talked all about that on the show. So her question is, he has two. First, how did you deal with New York City code with open flame since you're doing live fire cooking? So we'll ask that first. You want to hear the second part?
Yeah, sure.
Second part is, what is actually new and truly interesting that's going to blow his mind at your restaurant as someone who's jaded, having eaten at so many great places already? And I kind of answered that myself when we did the show, but I'm not going to tell you what I said because the question is for you.
The flames are definitely challenging. It's not as much the flames as it is the smoke. Uh-huh. That's actually the real deal of what gave us a run for our money here. Because we're in a residential, which most people don't understand, that we do have 61 floors of residential above us, as well as offices and a hotel. Being able to navigate the smells and figuring out how to mask them was really the biggest challenge of opening this restaurant.
Yeah, I'm thinking of barbecue places. That's probably their number one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can, you know, when you go upstairs here, you can smell it. And outside, it's funny because the restaurant across the street has wood fire as well. So we battled the smells outside. And they definitely use a different wood than we do, and you can smell it. We definitely have some lavender scents places and some things in hiding in vents and hoods and to try to mask. One of the guys that opened this place, he definitely got crafty and lots of lavender, which is a really aggressive smell. So hopefully it eventually did cover it enough so we didn't think the neighborhood was on fire.
Well, I haven't noticed that having been around here quite a bit.
It took a while.
But cool. And you're on three levels here.
Two levels, yeah. The downstairs is daily provision.
Okay. Well, the entrance, yeah, I guess from the entrance.
Technically, our foyer is three, yes. But you can, I mean, we want you to smell the fire when you open the door, but we don't want our neighbors to smell the fire all day.
Right, yeah. That's you figured it out.
The open flame scares me to no end as well, anytime. Every time I look over, I'm like, what's on fire? And I know it's just the grill, but like, I'm just waiting for the day that something gets spilled. And, you know, we have to think fast, needless to say.
Yeah, well, I think you'll, that's what you do, though, as a chef, right? Yeah. Think fast.
We do think fast, yes.
So, and then part two, what's going to bring him in?
It's a tough one. I mean, for me, three things that I love dearly. Four things I love dearly on the menu. The pizza bianca with anchovies and salsa verde. It's definitely one of my favorites.
Yes, had that. Delicious.
The onion torta is something that seems to be a fan favorite.
That's what I told him on the show.
We sold 550 of them last week of hand-rolled onion tortas.
It's so good.
It's insane. I it's so funny. The first time I made it, I just couldn't. I was like, oh, this is good. I like this. And it's really just... I just wanted to eat something with onions and like, but I could pick it up. The two other things are the stracci with rabbit and arnaise. For me, it's pasta. It's like layered of like aggressive wine flavor and rabbit and lots of Parmigiano. We use a mountain Parmigiano that goes over the top that the cows only grazed in the Alps. So kind of getting a little bit of that grass and pine in there. And then the trout is my other favorite. So the trout stuffed with mustard greens and pine nuts and raisins. And on the side is my Italian version of numb prick, basically, with serranos and fish sauce and vinegar. And so spicy and sweet. We use all the oil from the pine nuts and the liquid from the poaching of the raisins in the sauce.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I've had that. So, but I know I'm missing one. I haven't had one of those dishes there, the rabbit.
Yeah, the rabbit pasta.
I know what I'm getting next time.
And maybe a bite of the hazelnut gelato, maybe to finish.
Oh, I mean. Well, yes. Yes, your hazel. I don't know. That, yes, I have tried that thanks to you, and it's fantastic.
It's so good.
It's really.
It blows my mind sometimes.
Really, if not the best, one of the best hazelnut gelatos I've ever had.
We had such a great time working and learning and playing with gelatos this summer. And this hazelnut paste, there's no sugar in it. So it's just roasted hazelnuts, just straight. It's like you would eat it on toast, essentially. So we can control all the elements in there. It's really nutty and forward and delicious. And the texture of it,
Well, I mean, Alan is jaded, but I think if he doesn't come in off based off all that.
I'm happy to try to, you know, help him with his jaded side.
Yeah, we'll see. I think he'll be sold. So what? So this restaurant's quite large.
I hadn't noticed.
Quite large. How are you? I mean, and you recently, you're now doing lunch. So mm-hmm. How do you manage it? How do you manage your time, your team? How's it going?
We opened for dinner 5 nights a week and then went to 6 nights a week. And with our private events, and we were moving. We were finding a rhythm. It was great. And then we threw this wrench in called lunch. And I was like, no one's ever going to come here for lunch. We should be okay. And I definitely made a mistake. And there are people here for lunch. And that's what's really, it was like opening the restaurant again. So we're in the week 4 of that, and I know what I felt like on week 4 of opening this restaurant. We're still finding our footing in lunch and figuring out how to do those crossovers and how to, you know, when there's lunch guests and dinner guests, and we're still cooking and the team needs to get on the line, and there's, it's just loud and all day long here. There's a lot of moving parts. But yes, it's really large, but we can see it all, and it's kind of fun to watch it kind of go. When it's on the rails, it's great. When it goes off of it, it's my job just to keep bringing it back. So my time right now for the last 4 weeks has been spent basically getting lunch to a place where they don't need me. I've been spending a lot of time expediting lunch and dinner every day.
Yeah, well, I came in for lunch, and it was amazing. But yeah, people have discovered that you are doing lunch, and it's you're busy.
We're busy. We're still haven't opened the books completely yet for lunch. I still have to. We're still holding on to that dearly, capping our reservations just right now until we have a little bit more staff, a little bit more structure to be able to just let it go. But yeah, we're. We're on restaurant side of the, opening 2 in here, and then eventually we'll go to 7 and 7. But right now we are at 6 nights and 5 days.
Yeah, well, that's a lot. You have 2 open kitchens. It's a big space. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's really, but it's a lot to manage. Mm-hmm. For
we,
sure.
We definitely text the front kitchen a lot. It's a really silly, my sous chef Alex, who runs the front kitchen, he will text if we have a code word that when he needs help, and it's honestly just radicchio, and it's super funny, and he'll just send a text that says radicchio, and I know that he needs help and we have to help him, and someone goes up front to help him, we go back and forth, and then with the parties upstairs we have a constant text thread of what's happening.
Yeah. Well, communication.
Communication is key in this restaurant, and over communication is even better.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you're doing it as someone who's been here. You don't notice it just has been very smooth.
Well, thank you.
You know,
that was what we were trying to achieve.
Yes.
That you have no idea all the running around that we do, and it's kind of hard. I can't see what's happening up here.
Right.
So a lot of the food was designed so that it's easy to execute up front, and they can't look frenetic up here because they're right full in the center, and the pastry team is up here as well.
Yeah.
So you walk in, you can see the first courses and the last courses before you even sit down.
Yeah, and you had Claudia Fleming helping out on that pastry.
She was amazing. I got to spend all summer working with Claudia on this, and kind of sharing her experience and her running restaurants and her savory and sweet side and helping create what we've created here. And she was really an enormous help, even on the savory, when it was just her and I all summer long creating the food and tasting and testing. And she must have tasted so many versions of that onion torta and so many versions of the trout, and to see them now come to fruition, I'm sure it's really fun for her as well.
I'm sure. I mean, fabulous team you have here.
It was great.
So before we take a break, I get the impression that you still love it. What do you love most, and what's most challenging, I would say, or that you find nowadays?
I think right now, I mean, yes, I still love it. This is a, 29-year relationship with restaurants.
Yes.
I still love the the business. I love the moving parts. I love watching the guests. I love feeling that energy. Most of all, I actually just love teaching people about Italian food. The cooks, the guests. That's really what makes it worth coming to work every day and watching these guys excel. And tell me, we don't need you today. It's okay. You know, that's really what we are as chefs. We're just teachers. We're educators.
Yeah. And the biggest challenges besides the smell?
You know, especially in this restaurant, learning how to trust people was a big one up front, especially because of such a big opening and I couldn't see 9 of our 35 dishes, and learning how to teach people to see what I see and for them to figure out how to do it better. I think staffing is definitely, you know, we're experiencing that now. Definitely looking for a bigger team to be able to run all of this. I mean, a lot of things people don't, I mean, prices right now, products, getting products, pricing of products. That's a huge challenge right now. I mean, salt and fryer oil alone are like 5 times what they used to be, 6 times what they used to be.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's the little things that people like, you know, our job is a lot about looking at numbers
mm-hmm.
and data.
For sure.
But right now, yeah, those are some of the biggest things that we're facing and going. And now I'm just nervous about what's going to happen with spring. And then the challenge of the wheat industry eventually will be a big challenge because of what's happening right now, that a lot of wheat wasn't planted because of the war going on. And so we're going to see a lot of this down the road as well.
Yeah. Well, it's good you bring it up because I think a lot of people, especially like regular diners, don't think about this stuff.
Scarcity of products are going to happen eventually because we're not growing things that we need to grow now for later. I mean, if we showed guests half the time of what things actually cost, it would blow them away.
Well, do you feel you get pushback here from prices at all? Or I don't
know. I think we're fair. I think we're still approachable.
I think so too. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Italian food essentially is peasant food. So a lot of like, it was built out of necessity and what they had. And, you know, and we're honoring that. So, you know, we're making sure utilization of everything here is 100% important.
Yeah. Well, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a little break here and we'll come back. We'll play my speed round. We'll talk some industry news, have my solo dining experience, and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, a restaurant marketing and commerce platform that helps you get discovered, make more money, and engage your diners so you can deliver great hospitality both in person and online. In the heart of Williamsburg, Brooklyn, Lilia combines wood-fired seafood, handcrafted pasta, classic Italian cocktails, and warm hospitality. Since 2016, it's been celebrated as a neighborhood gathering place, bringing the best of Italy to New York City. Lilia is one of over 8,000 restaurants that leverages Bento Box to power their digital front door, including their website, gift cards, event management, and more. Visit getbento.com/HRN today to learn more and get your first month free. That's getbento.com/HRN.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Hillary Sterling. She's the executive chef at Ci Siamo in New York City, which is part of Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group. Hillary, it's time for my speed round game. What this is like name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Amazing. I love speed round.
Cool. Here we go. Eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant?
That's not fair.
I thought you liked speed rounds.
At home.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Al fresco.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Wine. I'm lying. Beer, probably.
Okay. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Okay, a few more. Pasta or pizza? I kill you.
If it was dried pasta, then, you know, dried pasta probably.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Working in an open kitchen or a closed kitchen?
Open kitchen.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Last one's Manhattan or Brooklyn?
It's going to have to be Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. All right. Cool.
Awesome. Those are tough.
You did well.
I mean,
you
I still, well. I don't know. Pizza really might be still, might be, that's the only one that I have to really think about.
Yeah.
I love them both dearly.
If I was answering, I would say pizza, but it's a hard one. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, for you, it's an impossible one. All right. You did well. And
thank you.
It's time for industry news. So I picked out this article in the New York Post. It's entitled Pete Davidson Delacour Street Style Trend Inspired by Bagels and Babkas. And this is by Jeanette Setembre, who's I know through the industry. She's awesome. So it's talking about, it starts out, come for the knishes, pastrami, and bagels, leave for the hats, hoodies, and t-shirts. So it's talking about this trend, you know, merchandise sold at restaurants, but there's been some collaborations with a lot, you know, big retail brands. Like there's one between Coach and Zabar's that they have going where they have an expensive little sweater for $495.
Oh my God.
And they have a leather tote. And there's actually, I went for this one last year. Jake Gyllenhaal has mm-hmm. done stuff with Russ and Daughters. And last year I bought, they had a black hoodie,
yeah,
which was pricey. It was $150, but the money, the proceeds was going to the Actors Fund, which felt good in the pandemic to be sporting them. And it has Lox mm-hmm. written across the top. And I'm like, I love Lox. I'm getting that.
Totally. So. Absolutely. I was at Russ and Daughters yesterday.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I need to go back there. But yeah, so what do you, I mean, I guess, I feel like merchandise for restaurants is always, people have had it and it's a good yeah. way to support restaurants, but this seems to be a little bit of a trend of more, I guess, high fashion.
Yes. I mean, food is so present and in all of everything we do. And, you know, restaurants are, especially in the last 2 years, has needed so much support and help. And I think it was a great way, especially last year, to get those two things together, to be able to support the actors and support the food. And I definitely wanted one of those Lox sweatshirts. And I think I missed the deadline of it.
I don't know if they're still available. They may be.
It might be. I'll have to take a look. My sister actually just got one recently. So maybe for her birthday. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's, restaurants are so popular and people know about them and people are so involved in food culture across the United States and across the world. Like we go to, you know, other places in the city, especially, or just other cities. And, you know, we're like, where are you going to eat? Where are you going to go? And then of course you want to bring something back, not just the memory. And I think that's also part of it. You're bringing back, you know, a piece of their restaurant and of what they have. I mean, I know Turkey and the Wolf has some crazy merch as well down in New Orleans that are really awesome and they're
yeah.
fun. I think chefs were creative, and I think this is another outlet, especially not just as the high end, but just kind of other smaller businesses helping bring in revenue without actually producing and having to sell food for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with all of that. I mean, it's certainly, I think we're going to see more of this, and I think it's a great way to support. It's a great way to have a memory or a mm-hmm. memento or something to take with you. And yeah, I mean, I'm into it. I think some of this stuff might be a little or a lot expensive, but then again, there's people who can go for it.
They have they have the opportunity and the will. Like they
right.
let them spend
yeah,
it. That's
exactly.
fine.
Exactly. If you had a, I don't know, if you had a collab, what would you, is there something you'd want to like merch? Or what do you merch? Do you have merch?
We
here?
Don't.
Okay.
We don't have that. Yeah. We, Maybe in year one, we'll at the end of year one, we'll figure that out. Because our logos are great. So we have tote bags and stuff for the teams and water bottles and stuff, but we haven't sold anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Chisiamo means, it means.
Oh, Chisiamo means, you know, are you ready? We have arrived. It has a lot of different slang,
yeah.
You know, meanings to it. we're here, you know,
right.
You know, let's go. Like,
yeah. Well, that could, I could see that, you know, these expressions
with the,
or something,
you know,
on
exclamation point.
Yeah,
you see,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. We'll work on that. Kelsey, if you can hear this, you know, eventually it's on you.
A little, give me a little credit. No, I'm just teasing. That would be cool. I'd get one.
We'll send you one.
Fabulous. So, and before I moved to my solo dining, when did you officially open here?
Mid-October of 2021.
Okay.
So we're 6 months. We're still a baby.
Were you, I mean, I work with restaurants in PR. Everyone's always delayed. Like, what was the delay and due from the pandemic?
The biggest delay was actually the furniture, what you're sitting on right now.
These shipping.
They took a while to get here. They definitely had a long adventure through the Panama Canal, through the Carolinas. They definitely got stuck here and there. So that was one of our biggest delays along the way.
Well, we're in this lovely, beautiful banquette. It was worth the wait. Yeah, very nice.
And I got to open with the end of summer fall menu already, so which was really lovely. My favorite time to cook.
Very cool. Well, yeah. I can't believe you've been around longer than 6 months, right?
it feels like we've been here for a while, but just 6 months, yes.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. Well, we'll look forward to the year anniversary.
Me too.
Okay, so let me do my solo dining experience. So this week I went to Veselka. So here's the rundown. The location, 144 2nd Avenue at 9th Street in the East Village, New York City. The concept, since 1954, Veselka has been serving up Ukrainian food from the same location in the heart of the East Village. The owners right now, third generation owner Jason Burchard. Why'd I go? Well, it's a great spot. I hadn't been in a while. It's a very, very beloved spot. And I wanted to go so show some support also for their Ukrainian efforts. So my experience. So recently, it was one of these nights in New York City that the temperature just dropped out of nowhere and it was freezing. It was a Sunday night. And I was down in the East Village. I was actually doing some work at a coffee shop. And afterward, I decided to walk over and get a little bite to eat. There was a little line outside. I waited about 10 minutes to go in. I would say it was worth it. Good energy inside. I got a little two-top in the back. Great server, John, helped me decide what to get. And we had a really nice talk. And it felt great to be there. So what'd I get? Well, I got a cup of borscht, which is traditional Ukrainian soup made with red beetroots. And I got four pierogies, Ukrainian-style dumplings, handmade daily. I went with the boiled ones because I felt they were more traditional. They also come fried. And my server, John, I let him pick out which ones to get for me. And I was surprised. So I had potato, meat, cheese, and sauerkraut mushroom. And it all came with sautéed onions and sour cream. And at the end, I got a coffee. My take, soup was great, very flavorful, lots of heartiness to it, some meat in it, really liked it. And the dumplings, almost to my surprise, I was like delighted how much I liked them. I wasn't sure boiled dumplings if I would absolutely love them, but I did. They're freshly made. I liked all four varieties. I'm going back. The ambiance, so it's a casual corner location, it's got wood tables, has a lot of character, it's kind of like a diner-esque vibe, and it has big windows too around the corner. I'd say it's perfect for a solo meal or dining with friends. Interesting tidbit, so currently their tagline is "Eat borscht, stand with Ukraine." They are donating 100% of proceeds from borscht sales, both in-store, takeout, and delivery to Ukraine, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to get it. And if you go to their website, they got a bunch of partnerships and donation efforts they're also doing for Ukraine. Recently, New York City's Mayor Eric Adams dined there. And he also, on that same trip, give her a shout out, visited my friend Barbara Sibley's Lapa Lapa, who I've also done some work for. So that was cool. Personal fun fact, this wasn't my first time there. I'd been there several years ago, and I remember last time I got the blintzes, which were also delicious. The cost of this meal was $17. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. And their website is veselka.com, Instagram, VeselkaNYC. There you go. I'm sure you've been there.
100%. It's so good.
I've been like.
I was like, man, should I just order that right now? It sounds great.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a large menu, too. There are a lot of options.
So much. I mean, but the pierogies are so good. And Linz's for me growing up was like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I don't know why we, well, not, we didn't have them all the time, but we had them enough that, and you know, you don't see many Blintzes on menus.
You see, Baz Bagels has them on their menu. But no, my mom used to get the frozen ones. And like, so they were just always in the, I know it's terrible. She, every time I say it out loud, she gets.
I think we did the same. And,
you know, but if, I mean, like Crispelle and crepes, it's all the same, you know, so you can make, during the pandemic, I'd made them at home with crepes and ricotta instead.
Well, at your caliber, yes, making them at home, I'm like, yeah, frozen can work.
But the frozen are definitely probably better anyway.
All good. Yeah, it felt good to be back. It was like, I was due for a visit, and it's a great spot. Okay, so it's time for the final question. So my next guest is Laura Lashley. She's the National On-Premise Manager for Diageo Non-Alcohol, where she leads the brand's training and advocacy programs in the U.S. She previously worked in New York City bars, most notably as head bartender and bar manager at Avroco's Madame Geneva and bar manager at the Breslin and Ace Hotel Lobby Bar. So, Hillary, what would you like to ask Laura?
I think the NA cocktail culture right now is just booming, and it's one of the highest grossing or growing parts of this industry. I really love a lot of the pre-made cocktails that have been coming out, but I also really want to see, you know, I find the NA spirits are being really sweet. So how can we figure out a way to get those to be into cocktails that aren't so sweet, and like to really make it a little bit more lighter and more fresh? Or is there products that we don't know about that are still up and coming? And how do we balance all of those things, especially for us? We have an NA beverage section here, and some of our biggest battles are not making things too sweet.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. There's a lot more happening in the space.
And there's so many options now. And just even, you know, the NA spritz culture is also really amazing. So I think there's so many great opportunities out there, and to keep it going and excelling and making it better. And NA beers, when I was training for a triathlon, I totally drank a lot of NA beers. And I definitely found ones that were better than others. And I think that all the breweries now are producing them, and it's great to see.
Yeah, yeah. And if you haven't tried Curious Elixirs before, I work with them. So if they've been around. They've been one of the pioneers in the space, and it's certainly been nice to see their growth.
But it's amazing. The Seed Lips and the Curious Elixirs that started bringing all of this NA opportunity to the front lines, like, you know, that's it's really great to see. It captures a whole different market.
It really does. I mean, I don't drink, so it captures me.
Absolutely. And we treat them like they are as high of a priority in this restaurant as anything else. So.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, I'm going to ask her. I look forward to talking with her because, she's going to be very knowledgeable about this field. So thank you. And thank you for taking the time to join me today.
And of course.
Feed me all the time, and
it's my pleasure.
I wish you much continued success. I have no doubt you won't continue to be successful, and congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
You're
thanks
very
for having
welcome.
Me.
My pleasure. Till next time. My guest today has been Hillary Sterling. She's the executive chef at Chisiamo in New York City, which is part of Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group. Their website is chisiamonyc.com and on Instagram at chisiamo, and Hillary is at Chef Hillary Sterling, and she's got two L's in there in the Hillary, so go find her, follow her, and follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Kevin. Thanks again to Hillary, and also to the whole Chisiamo team. Awesome to be here on location, a little behind-the-scenes look. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with a new show. Hope you'll tune in then, and thank you, as always, for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.